When we last connected back at the Hope Studios as part of Open House, we finished with a really short conversation, but it was a poignant one, around the loneliness that can sometimes come with the life of a politician, where so much of your time is spent away from family, and at the same time you're so endorsing families as the backbone for all of our communities. Now that you're Premier, is it lonelier still?
The truthful answer is yes. It's, people have said that the loneliest places are often in the busiest rooms, and I've felt that. I mean, I really have. I think when you're considering many issues that are very difficult to determine, you know that it's going to be difficult for some people on the back of decisions, and they're piled up. You haven't seen your family or friends for a while, and you're going from event to event. That's difficult because people at those events, I mean, they meet you and they want to talk to you about their issues, which is one of the joys of the role, to be honest. But at the same time, there is within all of us this deep sense of needing fellowship. We need human relationship, and if you haven't seen those who are near and dear to you and don't have the capacity to engage with your friends, the weight of some of those decisions and thinking time can just be incredibly lonely.
You're a dad, three kids, a wonderful wife, a lady who recently actually you admitted out, with her support I suspect, that you admitted missing the signs of postnatal depression with. This was in the last few days. And I thought, what a powerfully candid admission for a man who is at the forefront of a state's thinking around so many issues. What prompted you to make that admission? Because I know family is right at the heart of the way you live your life. I know that you miss them terribly when you can't be in contact with them, that they are a fantastic sounding board for you as well. Mm. So tell me about what drove you to make that kind of confession.
Well, I think, and Karen said at the time that she should have sort of made it clear that she didn't think I was a schmuck, which I called myself then. And look, I think it's the truth. That was me. And when I reflect back, that's not something I'm proud of. And, my hope is, in my defence, I had no idea what postnatal depression was, and I didn't know what I was dealing with. Where I was guilty was it was incredibly difficult behaviour to understand. And rather than try and understand, I chose to divert off, back to my career. That was a safe haven. And, one of the things that I've got the biggest regret, at the birth of our first daughter was, really only spending 2 or 3 days at home and then going back to a transaction that, as I shared at the time, I have no idea I can't even tell you what it was now, but it was the most important thing in the world. And yet, my beautiful daughter has now just turned 18 and grown into this incredible young woman. And, I should have spent more time as she came into this world. And I hope by talking out about this that I'm potentially reminding men that there's much more to life than your career, that if your wife is showing signs of postnatal depression, and it's much, we have to talk about it publicly, the sort of signs, that hopefully men can respond earlier. And, that obviously take away the pressure and the potential tragic consequences of postnatal depression. So, look, I think you just have to be honest, not just in this role, any role you're in, and hopefully that's helpful.
Did you get a chance when you became Premier to tell everybody, bureaucrats and whomever else were running your diary, that these were the windows that were going to be sacrosanct? What was your process in making sure that those kinds of decisions could be made more fluidly to the family's benefit?
Yeah, look, we work hard on that, and what we try and do with my diary is sort of lock out key periods, so Karen, family, church, rest, all of that which is needed. I mean, you need, I think you're a much better premier or leader if you spend more time with your, kids and your wife and your friends. I mean, if you're a real person, well, you understand how people are thinking, and you're happier in yourself, and you've got more energy for the challenges you're facing. So I think you have to be selfish in terms of your time for those that matter most to you, and structuring your diary is unfortunately really about the only way you can do it in this role, but we're determined to do that. And otherwise, the diary dictates to you.
For those who haven't been a part of our conversations in the past, a rich lineage of political leaders in the country, and then when we look at your siblings, executives in their own right, what were you guys eating for breakfast in the Baird household?
Look, I don't think breakfast has got anything to do with it. And look, in our family, I think the true heroes are probably the lower profile people, to be honest. I mean, my mum is someone who's the rock on which the family's built. She's never wanted any limelight. She's spent pretty much her whole life looking after others and serving others. So she's obviously very inspirational. And my brother, likewise. You cannot meet more of a champion bloke than my brother. So he is an executive doing incredibly well in his own career. He's off in marketing for an airline. But, I feel very blessed. I've got an incredible family and amazing parents and an amazing sister and brother. So very lucky.
With your father being so heavily involved in politics for most of your life, do you ever find yourself at your own dinner table thinking, wow, we've been here before, it was just my old man sitting here, or not?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I do remember a number of discussions, with my father and paying partial interest. I mean, I was more interested in what the test score was, or, what homework I hadn't done yet. But I do remember some of them. Some of them stick out very clearly, and similar discussions, but on different issues, is probably the best way to describe it. And I remember once he came to our dinner table and said, look, Nick Greiner has asked me to lead a bid for the Olympics. What do you think about that? And I, just leapt out of my chair and said, we've got to do it. That is awesome. Imagine Sydney hosting the Olympics. So being right there at the genesis of that and then seeing my father sort of lead it, I mean, I've never seen anyone work so hard. Inspirational on a number of levels. So I don't reflect back, and probably in many respects don't have much time to reflect back and is this exactly the same of what I've seen, but similar discussions just on different issues, I think.
One of the other key tenets in your life that you are very overt about, and that is faith. That is that intersection between vocation and belief. And when last we spoke, it was a really quick line, but you mentioned it was a wrestle where you thought for a long time that there was career and then there was faith, and that they were appropriate to be apart. And then when you brought them together, life got a little bit simpler, in fact, a great deal simpler. Could you address that for us from a leadership perspective? And while every decision can't be taken to the Bible, how does it function on a day-to-day basis in an office like yours?
Yeah, well, I think, not everyone who's listening is a Christian, but no. If you are a Christian, that sense of whatever you're doing in life, your faith is the most important, and having your work separate is dysfunctional. And you're right. For many years, I did separate the two. I think that the sense was, I'd go to church, I would lead a youth group and a Bible study group, and that was my ministry time, and then I'd put my tools down there and then go to work. But you actually, they come together. So an understanding that, how can I serve and reflect my faith in this environment, in my work environment, professional environment. And that took a while for me to realise that, of course you can do that, they're consistent. And in that context, I did wrestle, how would I live out my life and what did I want to do in terms of career-wise, that kind of brought this sense of vocation, which is faith and work coming together. And I initially thought it was becoming a church minister. And then I spent time at a place called Regent College up in Canada training for that, but when I was there, I wrote a paper on what brought me to this point and how I thought I would serve God from the days forward. And, in that I said I look forward to serving as a church minister. And the man who marked the paper put in ink underneath it, or in Australian politics. And, that was the point where I said, really? I'd been kind of running from that because I'd seen my father do it. And I thought, no, that's for him, that's not for me. But that moment turned it on its head, and I thought, well, actually, maybe I am passionate about trying to make a difference in my community and state, and I've seen the good side together with the bad side. So maybe, actually, that's where I bring everything together. What my what I've learnt, my skills, experiences, you know, my passion for community and hopefully serving with my faith. And that intersection was cemented in that year, and obviously I followed it from then on.
You mentioned that lecturer and that scrawled life advice. Other mentors?
There's been many. I mean, obviously, there are people such as my father, who naturally I'll call on and talk to across a range of fronts, and people I've respected across the political spectrum. So Peter Costello is someone that I've spent time with over the years. But, you know, there's other business leaders that I've drawn on in my career. And, you know, I think that wherever you are, there'll be leaders that you will look at that will either inspire you or you'd really like to understand, you know, how they've got to the position they have. And I've always been pretty forward in trying to spend time with them and listen. So I think you can't have enough mentors in your life.
The next generation of leaders who might be running away from something that their lecturer is redirecting them to, or perhaps a church is encouraging them to look up. What advice would you have to the young Mike Baird, who was struggling all those years ago about where to go and how to do it?
Well, I think the very simple line would be, in terms of going forward, you can achieve much more than you give yourself credit for. So my world horizon and my capacity and capability was significantly diluted from where I've achieved. I mean, if you asked me back then, would I end up here, I would have laughed at you. You might set a goal in terms of what you think you can achieve and what you can do, but if you push yourself, you can actually potentially do more. And not only that, you could do much, much more. And so as a life lesson to a 24-year-old, you know, if you think you can go to X position, well, aim for triple X, because you will surprise yourself. There's no doubt about it.